This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. In his budget address to lawmakers in January, Governor Phil Scott outlined a plan to increase funding for early education, higher education, and child care programs, and he proposed paying for these increases by freezing all local school budgets next year and restricting their growth in future years. This approach was soundly rejected by Democratic leaders at the State House. House Speaker Mitzi Johnson says the governor's plan was unrealistic and was designed to simply move a budget gap from the general fund over to the state's education fund.
I think this was a convenient way to find a way to spend a whole lot of money. He had a lot of investments in the budget, which are all worthy, needed investments. And he made none of the hard decisions necessary for actually being able to put the resources into them.
Governor says he won't raise taxes to pay for these budget increases. So what's the future for these plans? That's one of the questions we have for our guest today, Governor Phil Scott. Governor, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you for having me on.
So let's start off with this whole education debate. Here's the Democrats' argument. You are facing at least a $70 million budget gap in the general fund, but you want to increase spending on early education, child care, and higher education programs. You consider those to be top priorities. But they say you couldn't do that with the looming budget gap in the general fund, so you transferred these programs over to the state's education fund, and then you paid for them by freezing school budgets next year. Is that what happened?
Well, I think they're giving me far too much credit. What I'm trying to do is I look simplistically at the education spending, and what I'm seeing, I've said it numerous times before, but we're spending about $1.6 billion to educate 86,000 kids. And so when you have that student population that's declining at a rate of about three students per day on average over the last 20 years, that's unsustainable. The costs are increasing. The student population is dropping. We need to do something different. And I believe that we need to broaden the spectrum. I believe we need to spend more and invest more in those early childhood care and learning, as well as higher education. We spend so little money in those areas where we know, the science is real the child's brain develops incredibly fast in the first 0 to 5 years. So we need to put more money in that area. So I'm saying we spend too much money in K through 12, $1.6 billion, about $19,000 per student, that we could take some of that money and actually broaden the spectrum from cradle to career and invest more in those other areas if we could stop spending so much money in that, utilizing the money in different ways. So I look at things such as teacher retirement, health care. Everything goes into the same education budget. It's the same bucket. And so I want to put everything there so we know what we're spending money on, and utilize that and backfill it with general fund money as we do now in some respects. But having it all in one bucket so we know where it's all at is important.
So when the House Speaker was on Vermont Edition recently, she said she supports your initiatives, these ideas of putting more money into higher education, early education, childcare, all very worthy ideas from her point of view. The question is, how do you pay for it? And she said, now that your plan to freeze school budgets has been soundly rejected by the legislature, they think it's your responsibility to come up with a plan. And you look at that $1.6 billion on education, you seem to say there've got to be some efficiencies in those funds. So their question is, where are the efficiencies? How would you save the money?
Well, I think it's come to be that there's significant savings in healthcare alone. Healthcare savings, VHI, has identified maybe $30 million worth of savings, reduce healthcare costs for teachers' healthcare programs. So we should look there. And I believe that there's a path forward. I think what we need to do is agree on on the principles, on the goals. And if we all agree to that, I think that that's important. If we all agree that we shouldn't be raising taxes and fees, that we can't raise property taxes, for instance, let's put that aside. We agree with that. We agree that we need to be more efficient. We need to invest in other areas. Let's agree to those principles. And then let's work together to try to realize that. Because, again, $1.6 billion to educate 86,000 students is beyond the pale. And if we went to your listeners and asked them, if we had 86,000 kids and $1.6 billion to educate them, I would say, I dare say, they come up with a different system than we have now. So we have to have the courage to think outside the box and do things differently, because the status quo isn't working for Vermont.
So you're talking about possible savings in the teachers' health care program of about $30 million. Perhaps utilization is down. Isn't that a one-time savings? And are you reluctant to use one-time savings to increase spending in state government?
Well, I believe it's ongoing savings. If it's a reduction now, it's going to continue in the future. And again, if we can invest in those areas that we think are so beneficial that eventually, and I think it's short term, within the decade, costs will start to decrease, and social behavior will be significantly different if we can get to children earlier. And I think whether it's corrections, mental health issues, and better learning capabilities, I believe that it's all beneficial within the short term to try and stem the increased costs. But we're going to have to broaden the spectrum in order to do it. And higher education is essential for our workforce training, because we find situations where we have many employers in the state of Vermont who are looking for skilled labor, and there's no training for them for that aspect, for what they need. So we need to change the way we're doing in the trades as well. Plumbers, electricians, mechanical, technicians, we need more in those areas, because our service community is ongoing. And so we need to think differently about the way we're delivering education.
So we got this email from John in Stratford, Vermont, who supports your idea of not raising any taxes this year for any purpose. John wants to know if you'd be willing to meet with the leadership of the House and the Senate to see where there is agreement on funding priorities. And if you are, is this an issue that you think can be worked out?
I believe it can. And I know there's a lot of the rhetoric about what's going to happen. But I do meet with leadership on a weekly basis. I stay in contact with the pro tem, the speaker, other legislative leaders. We're trying to work together. I have a unique relationship, I believe, with them. I was in the Senate for 5 terms, 10 years, representing Washington County, and then was presiding officer as lieutenant governor in the Senate. So I've established relationships, and I believe that there's always a way to get to the end result, the common goals, but we have to find areas where we can agree. And I believe we have. We just have to work our way through some of the difficult aspects. Level funding is not easy. I've said that continually, that this isn't going to be easy, but it's essential. Because we can't continue to raise taxes and fees and put more pressure on those citizens who are here. Less people working than there were 10 years ago. Six less people working every single day on average than there were 10 years ago. So we are in a trajectory downward that's unsustainable.
So you think when all is said and done and the legislature adjourns, whenever that happens, that there will be money for these programs and you will be able to work out a compromise with lawmakers?
We all have to prioritize. And what I've said, my line in the sand is, we're not going to raise taxes and fees. And I'm going to live by that statement. How we get there what we prioritize, I think investing in areas where it will give us the much-needed benefit for a much more prosperous Vermont and growing the economy is something that I'm also committed to. On my first executive order, on the very first day, I developed three very simple guidelines that we think about every single day with every policy, every decision we make. And that's, how do we make Vermont more affordable? How do we grow the economy? And how do we make sure we take care of the most vulnerable? Those three very simple principles guide us every day.
We got this email from Mary Jane. Why didn't you campaign on your plan to mandate level funding school budgets? That would have given school boards a heads up so they could consider the option before their budgets were practically at the printer. What about next year? Are you hoping that lawmakers might take some action this year to say that the school budgets would be frozen a year from now?
Well, I'm hoping that we can put into place proposals which will enable us to grow the economy. If we can grow the economy and bring more revenue in organically without raising taxes and fees, we'll all benefit. So let's invest in areas where we can have some growth.
You've said on many occasions that you think Vermont faces a property tax crisis. Next week on town meeting day, more than 200 school budgets will be considered by local voters. Last year, about 90% of them passed. So if there's a property tax crisis out there, why are all these school budgets passing?
It does seem to be a disconnect between. I'm not sure that everyone really understands how connected their school budgets are to property taxes. But it's a direct relationship, and we have a typically low participation in town meetings, which is unfortunate. I'd mentioned a figure yesterday, which was incorrect, by the way. I stand corrected. I did it in haste, but it's still a very low figure. When you look historically, I think there was a voter participation in 2014 of about 25%, 2015 about 25%. Last year, it seemed to bump up to around 43%. I'm not sure why, but it's still low. And what happens is that those that are interested show up, there's a lot of apathy throughout Vermont. But I would advocate that people should become informed. They should get become active, vote on town meeting day, get involved, because you literally have the ability to make changes in your own communities.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Jody in Dummerston. Hi, Jody. Welcome to the program.
Hi, and thanks for having me on. And hi, Governor Scott.
Hi, good afternoon.
I'd like to say that I'm in total agreement with you about pre-K and early education. However, where I disagree with you very strongly is that the school boards and the schools are really under stress with all the social issues that are being put on them and all the unfunded mandates from both the federal and the state government. And to take more away from the education fund, I am totally against that. There needs to be more money put in the education fund and less things stuffed into it. So that is my issue. It's the social issues that are really driving up the costs.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we totally disagree, and thank you for the call. I'm just talking about truth in budgeting. When you advocate or when you say that I'm trying to stuff too much in the education fund. It's already there. It's just used and appropriated in different areas. And I'm saying, let's have some truth in budgeting. Let's put it all into one bucket so we know what the total cost of education really is. I'm advocating for backfilling that with general fund dollars to try and make all this work, which is where it's being funded now. But again, I'm just saying, let's look at it from a holistic view of what it really costs to educate. How can we take those limited resources and spread them out and invest in those areas so that we can have different outcomes? I feel for the educators throughout Vermont because things are changing dramatically in terms of social behavior. And some of the what they have to confront in the schools is a result, in some respects, possibly to our economy sputtering along. Families having to work, many people throughout Vermont are working two and three jobs, aren't spending as much time at home as a result. The cost of living in Vermont is becoming increasingly higher. Property taxes are a major part of that. And we have to change the way we do business. We're going to have to focus more on the economy. We're going to have to try and make Vermont more affordable. But the only way we're going to do that is to really focus like a laser on economic growth. And if we can focus on that, bring more higher opportunity, better jobs into Vermont, grow the businesses that are here, we'll have those revenues. And if we invest in early childhood care and learning, we will be able to have better outcomes for those students, less behavior problems in our schools, I believe.
Let's talk to Larry, who's calling from Benson. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'd like to just point out that the $30 million savings in health care is actually coming right out of teachers' pockets. The Obamacare move to Obamacare has less requirements for benefits and higher teacher copays and out of their pocket. And if we're talking about the economy, we need some really good teachers here. If we squeeze the teachers without acknowledging that or helping in any other way, the economy here. Thank you.
I'm wondering if what Larry is saying, and unfortunately we lost him, is that $30 million in savings, if it wasn't spent on another program, would that go to reducing teacher premiums?
Well, if the teachers have a health care now, and most teachers are receiving an increase in pay, and they're in this next year, they're still going to have health care, and they're still going to get their pay increases. I'm not sure why that the teachers should benefit from a reduction in healthcare costs. I believe that should come back to the general fund and be utilized for other purposes.
Today in the program, our guest is Governor Phil Scott. This is Vermont Edition on VPR.
We're doing something special this month, and we're asking you to help spread some podcast love. So I want you to think about a person in your life. Maybe a parent, a friend, your farmer, your vet, your neighbor, your barista, and recommend a podcast you think that person would really like listening to. Show them how to listen and to subscribe if they're new to this whole podcasting thing. And then hop on social media and tell us what show you recommended. You can use the hashtag TryPod, that's T-R-Y, pod. And thanks for spreading the love.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Phil Scott. Let's look at this plan that came out this week for possibly cleaning up Lake Champlain. The House Fish and Wildlife Committee is backing a plan to raise several taxes to pay for those cleanup efforts. The plan would go into effect in 2019. It would be sunsetted in 2021. It would raise the rooms and meals tax by 1%, increase motor vehicle fees, add a small surcharge to the property transfer tax. Committee Chairman David Dean says action needs to be taken now to ensure the water quality of Lake Champlain.
Don't put 1% on our rooms and meals tax. You know, that's going to make us uncompetitive. Wait until the lake turns green. You want to talk about uncompetitive? Your lake smells, looks funny, and is unsafe to be on? I think that's takes away any competitive edge you might have.
There was Representative Dean talking about, boy, if that lake gets much worse, it's going to be a real tourist problem. So he thinks that there needs to be some action now. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I would say that we are taking action. We have a two-year proposal that was brought forth by Treasurer Pierce, and I commend her for doing so. We're utilizing a number of different resources in order to make that work over the next two fiscal years. So we're in a position where we're going to move forward. I'm completely committed to cleaning up the lake. We're going to do that as mandated by the federal government. But I'm saying that instead of raising taxes and fees at this point, we have a two-year proposal that can work. Let's move forward with that. But let's contemplate some other resources that may be available over the next 2 years. One of them being this proposal to bring power from energy-rich Quebec down to population centers such as Boston. It's a proposal by TDI to bring a conduit down through Lake Champlain. It's pre-permitted. It's already done. Just waiting for some action from the state of Massachusetts. There's a proposal that's being contemplated as we speak about that. If that were to go, that could bring us in upwards from, by my calculations, of about $15 million a year. That's a significant chunk of what we're going to need for cleanup. As well, we've heard from the president and Congress proposals for infrastructure improvement. A $1 trillion package offered by, spoken to by the president. What that means, who's going to benefit? Is there going to be infrastructure improvements for stormwater, let's say, or possibly lake cleanups or for ag proposals for biodigesters? I don't know, but I think we'll know more within the next year. And so let's see. And again, if we can invest in some of the pro-growth areas, if we can invest in ourselves and get this economy rolling and growing and bring in more resources and revenue organically, maybe we'll have the money in the general fund to do this. But I think it's premature to send the message that we're raising taxes and fees once again, as we've been doing for the last number of years, for a situation that we have before us that's doable as we speak.
So I think what Representative Dean is saying is that he wants a fair amount of time to consider a very comprehensive long-term plan to clean up the lake, and he doesn't feel that the next 2 years represent enough time. So if you have the treasurer's idea for the next 2 years, you have the fish and wildlife plan for the 2 years after that, that gives the state 3 or 4 years to really develop a comprehensive plan.
Well, I would disagree that this plan has been developed by the treasurer within the last year. So in a 1 year period of time, she was able to come forward with a plan that will work over the next 2 years. I'm wondering why we can't take another year to give Vermonters a break. Let's not raise taxes and fees, and let's focus on areas where we can build and grow our revenue.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Phil Scott. Let's talk to Randy in Middlesex. Hey, Randy, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hi, Governor.
Hi. How are you?
I'm a small business owner in Middlesex. And we have just over 40 employees. And for about the sixth time in as many years, we have an employee who's about to have a baby and will be going on leave. But, of course, there, as a small business, there's no way we can afford to pay her while she's gone. So she's feeling pressured to come back as soon as she can, earlier than is really ideal. You talk a lot about supporting about early childhood and what an important time that is. This is a little bit before that. And you also talk about the importance of or how hard it is for people to get by in Vermont with all the various taxes and fees. Well, this makes it very hard to get by if you can't work, then you're without that income. So there's, as you probably know, there's a bill that is going to be going probably through the House and Senate here, and it's likely going to end up on your desk. I know you've said you plan to veto it, but this would, for a very, this family and medical leave insurance would be just a 0.93% payroll deduction, and would provide employees with as much as 3 months of fully paid leave. So I'd like you to reconsider.
Yeah, Randy, we appreciate your phone call. We also got an email from Elena about this, who said, Governor Scott, I know you've emphasized the importance of encouraging young people to move to and stay in Vermont, and you're working to make Vermont more affordable for Vermonters. As a young person who moved to Vermont for its reputation for being community and family-oriented, I think investing in a statewide family and medical leave insurance program would help achieve this outcome.
Yeah, hard to disagree with that, but we have to prioritize. I believe that we all agree that we have to grow our population. That's part of our problem. We've lost a number of our youth in this state. I've repeated this a number of times over the campaign, but we've lost 30,000 people out of the category from 25 to 45. So we need to grow our population, and particularly with those in the workforce. So growing families is a great great thing to do. I've prioritized trying to invest in early childhood care and learning. I think that that's an area that is a high priority for me for development and so forth in the future. We can't do everything. The resistance I have is the payroll tax. We have to maintain our competitiveness with other states, other businesses. The business community is feeling the pressures of a lot of rising taxes and fees over the last number of years. We are competing with other states as well, trying to draw new businesses in, trying to allow businesses to grow here in Vermont. So the payroll tax is the problem for me. Now, if they would like to come up, and I would advocate that they come up with a proposal where it's voluntary, it doesn't raise the payroll tax in some way, I'd be more than willing to listen. But raising the payroll tax is a showstopper for me.
So are you suggesting if it's voluntary, then it would be up to individual businesses to decide if they wanted to participate in the program, and then up to individual employees if they want to take part in it as well?
Yeah, correct. And I think there would be an incentive for those businesses to get together and advocate for that. Possibly some of the organizations should get together amongst their members to develop some sort of program that would incentivize, thus attracting more workers and employees. I know I was in business for over 30 years, and I prided ourselves on giving good benefits to our employees. It resulted in less turnover, higher quality. And we did that as a business decision, and I believe that this could be left as well. It could be a voluntary program, and without doing it on the backs of these businesses that are really, really on the edge. Many businesses are on the edge at this point in time, and one more cost, one more increase in, let's say, the payroll tax might put them out of business, or would not allow us to be competitive with other states.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Eli in Burke. Hey, Eli, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you to Governor Scott. I'm a 29-year-old Vermont native who's left the state and come back a few times, voted for Bernie Sanders as well as Governor Scott, because I think that, like a lot of Vermonters, I consider him to be a pragmatist and not someone who's an ideologue, which is why I've been very disappointed with his stance on cannabis, marijuana legalization. I think it's clear that Vermonters support this as far as being legalized from a criminal justice standpoint with a bill H-170 that's on the table. But beyond that, I would challenge the governor to and all of our representatives to show a little bit more leadership and vision and go even further with a bill H-490 that's on the table proposed by Representative Young. We know that we have huge economic challenges. We know that we need to attract more young people. Millennials, even conservative ones, overwhelmingly support legalization. The numbers across the country about how big an industry is are indisputable. And the fact is that right now, even with the most conservative RAND report, there's $100 million in the illicit economy, zero of which is coming into state coffers. So whether it's education, whether it's lake cleanup, I don't think that legal and taxed weed is going to solve everything and be this panacea that fixes our state overnight. But some of the critical issues we have, I think, could be addressed through a more proactive, more progressive approach. And so I'd really like to see Governor Scott sort of evolve his stance on this. I think that we know very clearly where the police stand, and so far most of what he said seems to sort of mirror that stance. So I'd like to hear a little bit more common sense, pragmatism, and independence from him as someone who voted for him and believes in his integrity and vision.
Okay, Eli, thanks for your phone call. Really, there are two different proposals over at the State House under consideration, as Eli mentioned. One is more the personal possession approach that the House Judiciary Committee is looking at. Individuals could have up to 1 ounce or 2 ounces of marijuana They could grow several plants. It's known as sort of the Washington, D.C. model. And then you have the one that Eli mentioned by it's been proposed and sponsored by Representative Young. That's much more of the Colorado model. That would be retail stores, big state infrastructure, taxation. I want to talk to you about your thoughts on impairment and driver impairment. But if you look at those two models, if you could take driver impairment out of the equation, do you favor one of those two approaches?
Well, you know, as I've said numerous times over the last year or two, I'm not saying never. I'm just saying not now. I think we just have an opportunity to watch other states and learn from them. We've whether it's Colorado or Washington or Oregon, we have the opportunity to learn from them, trying to develop a impairment restrictions in some way to make sure our highways are safe, I think is very, very important. And I've looked at some of the bills that are progressing or going through the House or being proposed. And you know, you can see both sides. My libertarian streak in me says that what you do in your own home is your own business. So I tend to look at that from that perspective. One of the bills is going through the House, so I understand that. But as well, you know, when you look at the other proposals, are you just muddying the waters? Are you just making it more complicated? How is enforcement going to work? What are we going to do in the future? Does that just make it worse? And so coming up with a system that's much more regulated has its benefits. I don't want this to be about money because I'm not sure. I think that's short-term thinking because as other states evolve and legalize, there won't be as much money coming into the coffers, I don't believe. It's not going to be a destination state we don't know what the costs associated are with it either. So let's not look at this about money. Let's look at about this as trying to develop policies that set guidelines in terms of impairment on our highways and edibles and what is it that we can do. Make sure we protect our children. Let's make sure we protect our citizens, and then move from there to legalization.
So we got an email from Dave in Middlebury who wrote us, Governor, your own traffic safety experts testified in legislative hearings that drug driving is an existing problem that is much broader than marijuana and needs to be addressed separately from the legalization debate. They also specifically asked the legislature not to set a per se THC blood limit, and the solution they want to see is more training of drug recognition experts and in-state blood testing lab capacity. The per se limit saying if you hit that limit, you are considered to be impaired, legally impaired. We see that with the blood alcohol level. But is the problem, from your point of view, in part that there is no there's no consensus on impairment with THC?
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's been any proposal in any states that clearly defines what the level of impairment is. And I think that's the problem that I have is let's have a clear limit. Let's understand, like we have with alcohol, whether it's it started out 0.10, it's now 0.08, let's have a set bar. And so I would like to see us learn from those other states. I'm sure Colorado is working at it as we speak, as well as other states, in trying to develop that before we move forward. For the sake of argument, I would say that once you legalize, there'll be increased use. So maybe it's going on our highways at this point. We need more drug recognition officers. I agree. But there's resources associated with that as well, much more training. And there's other saliva tests and blood tests and so forth that are being contemplated. But it all takes money in order to do so. And so if we can make sure that we're moving in the right direction, let's do it in the most cost-effective way. Let's have a reasonable approach and make sure that we're taking care of people on our highways as well as taking care of our children. Because I'm sure once the legalization takes place, there'll be an increased use.
So is your message to lawmakers, don't pass a legalization bill during 2017?
I'm saying let's focus on the other areas first. Let's determine the regulations associated with such before you pass it. Let's not pass it first and then react to it and determine levels of impairment. It seems like we should be able to create a structure, a program, and agree to what impairment means. And let's do that first and then legalize. You're putting the cart before the horse as far as I'm concerned.
Let's turn to Andrea in South Burlington. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you?
Great. What's on your mind?
I was just listening to Governor Scott mention being competitive with other states, but I'm Canadian, but I went to high school in Minnesota. My dad worked for IBM, so we moved around quite a bit. Unfortunately, we never ended up in Burlington. I'm only recently discovering the amazingness that is Vermont, but Canada is also planning on legalizing marijuana, I think, upcoming this year. So I think it would obviously be prudent to, in an economy that's as dependent on Canada as Vermont is, to sort of align their policy changes with the economy they're most tied to. But along those lines, I'm just wondering, like you said, being competitive with other states, but I would imagine like their greatest competitor would be like Quebec and Ontario. And with the dollar so low in Canada right now, Americans are getting an extra 30% on their dollars, and you know, retail prices are roughly the same. So, and for things like skiing, you know, so many Americans are heading to Quebec and Alberta and BC right now. So I'm just wondering what they're doing to try and stay competitive and, and just maintaining those open borders as well. Because I know Minnesota as well was so dependent. And unfortunately, the reason we ended up in Minnesota was for tax purposes. My dad's $160,000 that he was making there went a lot further. So I didn't get to ski in the state I wanted to. As a teenager. So, yeah. That's,
okay.
That's my thought.
All right. Thanks, Andrea. And let's broaden it out a little bit. I mean, I wonder, in terms of Andrea talking about cross-border business, the steps you're taking to try to encourage that. And in recent weeks, with the activity from the Trump administration, are we seeing an impact on that at all?
Well, as you probably know, we went to Quebec a couple of weeks ago to try and establish a relationship with them. They're our largest trading partner. And we think there's a tremendous opportunity to grow that relationship and to bring more business into the state. It was very productive. We had numerous conversations with the premier, many of the ministers within Quebec, and look forward to capitalizing on that, because they do come to Vermont regardless of the exchange, which I think is important. But I think Andrea made some good points in terms of as well with what drives people from the state and the cost of living and taxation really does make a difference. She mentioned her family moving to the Midwest because of the tax policies. So their dollar went further in a state that was lower tax. So we should take some of that, heed some of that advice, and do whatever we can to make Vermont more affordable so that we can grow the economy, so we can bring more people in. I'll be taking a trip this next week as well to go to Toronto for another meeting with the premier in Ontario. And because Toronto is an area that isn't far from us, we have an airline that's flying a couple times a week there. We would like to boost trade with them. They are, I think, the third largest city in North America, I believe. And it's really, I believe, could possibly be fertile ground for us in trying to bring more from Ontario, more from Quebec. We have a lot in common with both of those provinces, and I believe that we can do more in the future.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Peter in Shelburne. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with the governor. I'm confused by some of the things that you said on the show. However, when you talk about legalizing marijuana, you say, well, let's not make it about the money. When you talk about not wanting to pass family leave, well, then it's about the money. So, I mean, eventually, everything's about the money. It seems like it's just an excuse to me about the programs you want and the programs you don't want.
Well, I think we have choices in life. We have to prioritize in areas that that we think are beneficial for the state. That's what I'm doing as governor. I need to public safety is one of my primary concerns. I believe that any government, that's their responsibility to provide safety for their citizens and make sure that we're moving in the right direction. We have in hand the available other states who are moving forward have legalized by referendum, by the way, not by legislative action, and we're going to learn from them. And I've said repeatedly, I'm not saying never. I'm saying not now until we can work out the differences. I would say that if you ask any of those governors from those states who have legalized, if they would have preferred to take the steps necessary to provide for public safety, to work out some of the kinks, to make sure that they had the structure in place before they legalize, I would say they would have agreed with that. The governor of Colorado has repeatedly said, you know, for those who are contemplating legalization, I would advocate waiting a bit. Let us work these quirks out. Let's tweak our own policy. Let's learn from this before you move forward. So I think it's good advice, and I believe that a pragmatic approach, common sense approach to doing this will protect our citizens and make sure that we don't utilize resources in a much different way. We don't have unlimited resources. We have to use them wisely. And again, I'm convinced that we can have a much more prosperous Vermont if we make the investments in the right area. And I would advocate that we do so in trying to lower the cost of living in Vermont and grow the economy.
We got about a minute left in the program. Do you think the debate in those states that adopted legalization through voter referendum, that the debate in the legislature is very different than the one that Vermont's having?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that, again, there are some who are struggling to try and they're being reactive to the policy. It was somewhat forced upon them, and they were forced to develop the regulation afterwards. I think Maine, Massachusetts, is again, faced with that, with their referendum vote. And so they're scrambling to try and adopt policies and regulations in order to contemplate this move. Again, we'll learn a lot from Maine and Mass as well. But we don't know what's going to happen on the federal level either. I've heard from the Trump administration, their policy, their thoughts are a bit different on marijuana, and that could have an adverse effect on those states who have legalized. So, you know, I've said repeatedly, I'm not saying never. I'm just saying not now. I voted for medical marijuana. I was in favor of decrim. So it's not as though I'm adverse to the concept. I just want to make sure that we're safe in doing so.
Well, we've discussed a lot of important issues today. Governor Phil Scott, many thanks for taking the time to be on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Coming up Monday in Vermont Edition, some healthcare officials think Vermont is facing a major crisis with its primary care system. We'll take a look at the state of primary care in Vermont and some plans to improve it. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.